Sam Stoddard here. I want to thank you for honoring me with some of your time so that I can share some thoughts with you about the senior living industry. For me, senior living has changed my life. It's been an exciting ride over the last 10 years as I've had the opportunity to work with and be around seniors. I've found there's about a handful of things that if you get those right, it'll dramatically increase the success that you have in this industry. My story started a long time ago. I was 8 years old. That's when my father started bringing me to the nursing homes. When I was 21, I met a pretty girl. I thought, hey, I'd like to marry that girl. 5 months later, I married her. 2 weeks before we got married, I looked in my bank account. There was only $25. All of a sudden, it hit me. $25 is not going to be enough to take care of this girl. I decided I should probably get a job. Guess how much money I had a year later? That's it. $25. But that first job was at a senior living community. It was a small 12-bed assisted living. I enjoyed it, fell in love with those people, and enjoyed every moment. 5 months after I started as a caregiver, a new owner came in. He had gone through two or three administrators and struggled to find the right people. He was new to the industry, as was I. I tend to get myself in trouble being overambitious, and I went up to the owner and I said, hey, if you'll give me a shot at this, I think even though I'm in college, I could be the administrator and we could really turn this around. He gave me a shot. The only problem was I didn't know what an asset was, a balance sheet, a receivable, a payable. I didn't understand what state rules were. I didn't understand policies and procedures. I was about 21 years old. So I went to take the administrator's test. I failed the test. It was devastating to me because of this owner who could see more in me than I could see in myself. And he saw the love that I had for these people. He encouraged me to take it again. I went and took the test again, and I passed. And then I thought, hey, I've made it. I'm now an administrator. I've come to realize that passing a test does not make you an administrator. It just gives you the authority to act as one. The things I'm going to share with you today are what will help you become a great administrator, and you'll learn what great administrators do. My problem was I went in to be an administrator and made one mistake after another. I struggled in so many ways. I had staff issues and resident and family dissatisfaction. I didn't know how to fix those. I didn't know how to manage. I continually made mistakes one after another. But this great owner kind of took me under his wing and taught me. He taught me the principles of business success. Then I had a father growing up that taught me the principles of serving people. And together with those two principles and a lot of patience, we went on to stay 95% or higher in occupancy for 5 years. We became the premier assisted living in the area. We doubled in size, doubled in profits, and put one competitor out of business and bought up another one. And now he controls the market in that area. What a neat experience it was. And I said, wow, this is great. You know, even with lots of mistakes, thanks to these principles, we were able to do some great things. Well, something in me wanted to understand the small business side of the industry and the corporate side of the industry. So I went after 6 years. I'd graduated from college in business. After 6 years with that owner, we went on and I started looking for another job. I got from Idaho to Virginia and became the director of an 86-bed assisted living. The challenge was it was 74% occupied, had over 500 hours of overtime in the first month I was there. It had lost thousands and thousands of dollars to its budget. There was one issue after another. Some people hadn't been charged care charges for 6 months. I remember a situation of talking to a family member that they owed $10,000 because we had failed to put the care plan in and charge those care charges for 6 months. The satisfaction was poor, and there was just one struggle after another. I remember going home to my wife and saying, "Lacey, we messed up. Let's go back to Idaho." This was about 3 months into it. Thank goodness for her, she's always been so sensitive. And she turned to me and she said, "Sam, you knew what it was when you picked it up. Go back to work." So I went back to work. And 10 months later, we hit 100% occupancy. We cut overtime to as low as 2 hours 1 week. Profits went up 82% in that first full year. We're the number one in the Southeast Division. We were the number two in occupancy gain in the whole division. I believe there were over 100 communities. Our retention went up from 47% to 84% in just over a year and a half that I was there at that building. From there, an opportunity came to manage a 250-bed assisted living. Once again, probably overambitious. When I got to this building, there was no state license. It had expired because of state issues. The call bell system had been broke. The state showed up my first day there. I thought, what have I done? Who am I to think that I can run a 250-bed facility at the age of 30? Once again, I made one mistake after another, one challenge after another. Fell on my face multiple times. And now that's where I currently find myself. We just hit the highest occupancy in 27 years with this building. Every department has improved. These principles that I'm going to share with you are the reason that these things happen. They're not me. They're the principles applied over time consistently that create the right culture and experience for residents, families, and associates. And if you can do that, then you can, you'll see the fruits of that, which is increased profits, increased retention, and increased satisfaction for residents and families and associates. There's a story of a battleship in the North Atlantic Sea, and they're going along, and there's an object up ahead. They think it's a ship, and they call over to that ship, and they say, "Hey, move 15 degrees to the south to avoid collision." And the voice comes back over their radio, "No, you move 15 degrees to the north to avoid collision." And finally, the captain gets back on and says, "Hey, I'm the captain of this ship. You will move 15 degrees to the south to avoid collision." And the voice comes back again, "No, you move 15 degrees to the north to avoid collision." Well, this captain is just very frustrated and says, "Look, I'm the captain of the largest ship in the North Atlantic fleet. Move 15 degrees to the south." And there's a pause. And then the voice comes back. "This is the lighthouse, mate. It's your call." I love that story. You know, one of the challenges for us is learning how to change. Jim Rohn said it best. If you will change, everything will change for you. Some of us go through our businesses or our lives, relationships, whatever it is, and we keep expecting other things or circumstances to change for us. And all we do is every 10 feet symbolically hit a lighthouse. And we get frustrated with those people and those circumstances when they don't change degrees 15 degrees to the south. If you will change, everything will change for you. I've found this to be true. I hope that the things you hear today, you will take and change in some way to apply them and become better in this industry. I've found that one of the most crucial things in this industry's success is leadership. Jim Rohn said, "Leadership is really the challenge to be something better than mediocre, better than average." The challenge of a leader is to help people get to higher ground. One time I was visiting with a supervisor. She sent me an email that said, "Sam, if all my associates were as good as I am at this job, I wouldn't have a problem." Now, I had to think about that email, and I had a few things I wanted to say regarding that email. But as I thought about what she had said, I realized she's more right than she knows. See, the purpose of a leader is to help those associates be just as good as she was. That's the real test of whether she's a great department supervisor. There's a great Hindu story that I just love. I heard it first from Mary Morrissey. It's about a pregnant tiger who goes out and is very hungry. She sees a herd of goats, and she attacks those goats. Those goats scatter, and in her efforts to attack those goats, she falls over, and she dies giving birth to her cub. Well, all those goats come back, and this tiger cub grows up with these goats because they've adopted him. And this tiger cub grows up thinking he's a goat. He walks like a goat. He talks like a goat. He eats grass like a goat. Everything about him is goat-like. One day, this big male tiger comes to attack this herd of goats, and all of them scatter except for this one tiger cub. And this tiger cub looks up at this male tiger, and the male tiger says, "What are you doing?" And he says, "What do you mean, what am I doing?" And the male tiger says, "You're acting funny. You're acting like a goat." He says, "I am a goat." He says, "No, you're not a goat. Come with me." And they go to this clear, still pond. And that tiger cub looks into the pond, and he sees his reflection, and he looks up at this male tiger, and he turns to him and he says, "I'm confused." And the male tiger says, "Come with me." And so they go into a cave where the male tiger has killed a gazelle. And the male tiger says, "Hey, try some of this meat." And the tiger cub says, "I can't eat that. I'm a vegetarian." And the male tiger says, "No, just try it." And that young tiger cub takes some of that meat and he chokes on it. He wants to spit it out. And the tiger, male tiger, says, "No, just try it." And so sure enough, he tries that meat. That meat gets in that young tiger's bloodstream. And he rears his head back and he bares his claws and he roars. Now, it was just a tiger cub roar, but he had kind of an awakening of who he really was. See, the purpose of an administrator or a leader. And by the way, a leader is not about title. A leader is your ability to influence people, to motivate, to achieve great things. So the purpose of a leader, whether it's an administrator, whether it's a parent, supervisor, whether it's a caregiver leading other caregivers, the purpose of a leader is to help people become more. Aeneas Nin said, "We don't see things as they are. We see them as we are." See, if you want your assisted living, senior living, nursing home, home health, whatever it is, to be the best it can be, you have to help people become more. Jim Rohn said it best. If you want to have more, you have to become more. Your job is to be a tiger that helps people realize who they really are. As you help develop leaders, you help develop people, you do it in a way that they want to follow you and become more, so that they can see things differently, so that they stop running into lighthouses. That's the same for you. The greatest challenge for you is to become more. If you want more, you have to become more. Ken Blanchard, in a great book, The Secret, What Great Leaders Know and Do, he said, "I believe that developing leaders is our highest strategic priority as an organization. Everything rises and falls on leadership. If I don't invest the time in helping other leaders grow and develop, then the people I work with won't see it as a priority, and they won't invest the time either. I believe we demonstrate our priorities with the way we allocate our resources, and that includes our time." What a great statement. If you really want to make an impact with those that you manage, then I would buy this book for every one of them, and I would spend about 30 minutes a week reviewing it. Have them read it ahead of time, and just review it once a week for 30 minutes. It has had a dramatic impact on my business, wherever I've gone. Let's talk about leadership. As the leader does in an organization, so does everyone else. What you focus on is what they will focus on. Leadership is not a matter of title. There's three things that leaders do. I call them the three R's. Raise the bar, help them reach it, and review. Let's talk about these. Raise the bar. Another way of stating that is they set high standards. What makes a great standard? That's an interesting question. There's a great movie called Remember the Titans. In this movie, there's a lot of controversy due to race and other issues. And they've asked Coach Boone to be the head coach. Well, after one of these conflicts between players, Coach Boone gives a speech. And he basically says, "We will be perfect in every aspect of the game." And goes on to tell them, "If you drop the ball, you got to run a mile." And gives them all these different standards so that they can be perfect in every aspect of the game. Why would Coach Boone set a standard of perfection, knowing that none of his players are perfect? I've often wondered about that. But here's what I've learned. If you want to change something by 1 or 2%, then set a standard that will only cause 1 or 2% change. But if you want to change something by 50%, 80%, 100%, if you want occupancy to go from 74% to 100% and retention to go from 47% to close to 100%, then you've got to set a standard so high that it causes people to rethink and change everything in order to achieve it. That's when you can test if the standard's set high enough. Now, some areas, it might be like occupancy. Hey, we're going to go to 100%. For example, in the building that I'm at right now, in March of 2014, we set a standard to be at 100% by September 30th, 2014. The only problem is we have to net three, get three more move-ins than outs, every month until September. That may not sound like a lot to you, but if you knew the past, in the past 8 months, 9 months, we had only netted three one time. So we set the standard. I didn't know how we would achieve it, but needless to say, we're on track, and last month, we netted five. Set the standards high so that it causes people to reach and to change to accomplish those standards. The next R is reach. Help them reach the bar. Help them reach that standard. Help people accomplish those standards. Sometimes I find that we're good at setting standards, but we don't ensure that a staff member has everything they need to accomplish that standard. Do they have the right tools, the right policies and procedures, the right training, the right tracking, the right systems? Have you implemented two important things, the importance factor and the understanding factor? Let me tell you a story. I have a little boy named Max. He was about 2 at the time. He was sick. He had a runny nose constantly all throughout the day. Well, all throughout the day, we were wiping his nose with a tissue. And his nose started to get raw right under his nose. And it hurt him. Well, he sneezed, and a whole bunch of booger came out and was hanging right above his lip. And I went to grab a tissue to wipe away that booger. And he started fighting me. He clawed at me. He started crying, "Leave my nose alone." I didn't know what to do. So I picked him up. I went into the bathroom. I showed him in the mirror his nose. And without hardly a word between us, I picked up a Kleenex and I wiped his nose without a fight. I would ask you, what changed? That's right. Max's understanding changed. He understood why I was doing what I was doing. He didn't want that there any more than I did. But he couldn't understand why I kept scraping at his nose. I've come to realize that if we're not careful, associates, those we manage, or a spouse, or a child, or whoever else, will feel like all we're ever doing is scraping at their nose. Do this, get that done. Why aren't you doing that right? And we don't make sure that they have all the tools and things necessary to accomplish those standards, especially the importance factor and the understanding factor, which I'll cover with you later. The third art is review or follow up. So basically, we're setting high standards, helping people accomplish them, and then following up. Forbes magazine did a study of 25 CEOs. They were all fired. Do you know why? These CEOs were from large companies, mid-sized companies, and small companies. Through this study, they found that the reason they were fired was because they failed to take action. One of the toughest lessons that I'm grateful someone taught me was this. I was young, probably 22 or 23, trying to be an executive director over 42 beds. The owner of that building came to me and he basically said, "Sam, whatever happens in this building is your fault." And I said, "Wait a minute, that's not fair. I'm not at fault for what the caregiver does or a nurse does." He says, "Let me help you understand. You're the leader of this building. You need to understand that whatever happens in this building, I'm holding you responsible. You may not be directly responsible for what happened, but you are responsible for making sure it's fixed and taken care of and that it doesn't keep happening." In the book Good to Great, Jim Collins explained it this way. He found as they studied great leaders that they practiced a principle he would call the window and the mirror. And it was this. When things were great, these great leaders looked through a window, symbolically, and they said, "Look at all these people that have made our company great." When things weren't great, they looked in a mirror, and they realized that's the person who's got to change it. See, the easy road usually becomes hard, and the hard road usually becomes easy. That's from T.S. Monson. I heard once that the only difference between successful people and unsuccessful people is that successful people do what unsuccessful people don't want to do. So I've given you the formula for what leaders do. They set high standards, help people accomplish them, and follow up. Raise, reach, and review. There was a concept brought up to me once in the book The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. And he said, "How much does a horse win by?" He went on to teach a principle that's come to mean a lot to me. He said, "A horse will win by a nose. But did you know the difference between a first place horse and a second place horse in prize money is 10 times the money? So is the horse 10 times better? No. The horse is just a nose better. See, you don't have to be 10 times better than the competition. You just have to be a nose. The way that you become a nose better is doing simple things consistently over time will have a dramatic impact. I'm going to teach you some of those simple things. We've covered some already today. If you'll apply the three R's in your leadership, just take any area of your business like care services or dining services and say, what should the standards be in this area of our business? Where are we struggling? Where do we need to set a standard higher that'll cause people to reach and to grow and become? And then I would say, well, do they have everything they need to accomplish it? What else do they need? Have we trained them? Have we implemented the importance factor and understanding factor, which I'll cover? Then I would ask the question, who will be following up? How often should they follow up? Is it tracked, the follow-up that we're doing? Those are important questions. Then you can win by a nose. There's two keys to getting employee retention as high as it can be. The key factors are 1, hiring the right people, and 2, how you treat them after they're there. There's three pillars to this business: residents, families, and associates. I would ask you, which one's the most important? When I ask that question of new applicants, they all yell out, residents. And then I say, anyone else have any other opinion? Someone might say families. Rarely will they ever say associates. I'm suggesting that all three are of equal importance, especially residents and associates, but families is right there too. See, what people make a mistake with is they don't realize if you want the very best care for residents, then you should create the very best experience for associates. So I'm going to teach you two factors. I call them the importance factor and the understanding factor that will dramatically help you in how you manage and work with associates. There's a book called How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's a great book, been around for years. Have you heard of it? Have you read it? It's my opinion that about 80% of success in life is probably people skills. I say 80%, it just sounds about right. But basically, a lot of reason for success deals with your ability to relate with, influence, and be around people. In that book, they did a study and basically asked, what's the greatest desire of the human heart? And it came up multiple times that the greatest desire of the human heart is to feel important, appreciated, and to be great. I often ask people, what does a newborn baby yearn for, need, and desire? I have a 7-month-old right now. He yearns to be loved, touched, noticed, held, and he needs some food. He wants safety and shelter and things. Let me ask you this. What do the elderly yearn for, need, and desire? Food, love, safety, to be noticed, to be held at times. Well, what do you and I yearn for, need, and desire? If you think about it, it's the same things. The greatest desire of the human heart is to feel important, appreciated, and to be great. It doesn't matter if you're a newborn baby or a 90-year-old elderly widow, or you and I. Sometimes we think that a new car or a house or whatever it is might buy some of that. But I've seen the beginning and worked with the end for about 10 years. None of those have ever said, I wish I had that new Lamborghini. What do they yearn for? To feel important, appreciated, and to still have a purpose, to be great as something, be noticed, be there. That's why I love the quote by Danny Myers when he said, virtually nothing is more important than how one is made to feel in every business transaction. What's a business transaction? That's a great question. In our business, it's every time you walk by an associate in the hall or a resident, every time you provide any kind of service like bathing, toileting, providing a meal, doing a nursing task, reviewing a care plan. Those are a business transaction. Anytime we interact with people is a business transaction. By the way, who's our customer in the senior living industry? You probably guess residents. Probably can guess families. In my opinion, an associate is your customer also. There's a saying out there, you've probably heard it, that goes something like this. Treat a man as he is and he'll remain as he is. Treat a man as what he can become and he will become it. It was by Johann Wolfgang. See, the goal of a leader is to treat people as what they can become so that they will become it and to help them become it. I got a question for you. Is it better to be trusted or to be loved? I was part of a group for 2 years in Arizona. And the leader of our group went up on the chalkboard and wrote, it's better to be trusted than to be loved. Some of the people in our group had broke some of the rules of being part of that group. And he was trying to teach a principle that in life, it's better to be trusted than it is to be loved. I agree with that quote, but I've come to realize that the very best leaders are trusted and loved. I'll never forget two associates. It was second interviews, separate times. I asked them this question. Out of everything that an employer can give you, what's the most important to you? You know, they could have picked wage or benefits or certain shift or hours or whatever it is. One said, I just want to be appreciated. The other said, I just want to be respected. In the last group interview that I did, we had 12, 14 people there. At the end of that interview, as we explained that associates are important to us and that we want to create an environment that they will enjoy working in and enjoy being part of that culture and experience, there was an associate in the back. She raised her hand. She started crying with tears in her eyes. She said, I've done this for years, and no one's ever told me that we're important. I just thought, we are missing the boat in our industry. We don't realize that you can judge the happiness of your life in any area of your life by the relationships that you have in that area of your life. It doesn't matter if it's a spouse, a husband and a wife, a boyfriend and a girlfriend. It doesn't matter if it's a parent to a child. If the relationship's good, there's more happiness there. And it's the same at work. Associates will judge the happiness of their life at work by the relationships that they have with that manager, that director, and their coworkers. So if you want to increase retention, figure out how to help create the right environment for associates and to build them and make them feel important. Jim Rohn said, what you appreciate, appreciates. That is so true with associates. You know, I have three kids. Max is 5 now, McKaylee is almost 3, and Thomas is 7 months. Why do I love these kids more than some other kids? I know it's kind of a silly question, but if you understood our story, you would realize maybe why these kids mean so much to me. See, we couldn't have kids for 4 years. When I graduated from college, we went to Europe, my wife and I. The great thing is a family member paid most of the expense. We enjoyed it a lot. When we were in Switzerland, we got a call from the adoption agency that we had been working with to try and adopt a child. The social worker said, hey, I need you to get home. I said, I'm in Europe. He said, there's a baby that's going to be born tomorrow on April 1st, and if you want him, you need to get home. I said, well, I've got 5 days on my trip. Can you just wait? And he said, no, you need to get back. If you can't make it back, we're going to have to give that baby to someone else. I said, well, don't do that. Let me check. So I checked. It was going to be $5,000 a ticket to be able to come home early. That's $10,000. We didn't have that kind of money. So I prayed that something could be figured out there. And the female doctor that delivered Max brought him home for 3 days after the hospital, took care of him and everything until we could get there. We'll forever be grateful to her for that blessing. Well, we got home. We slept 2 hours. We drove 7 hours to a town called Cody, Wyoming. Boy, we had so many emotional feelings. We were excited and thrilled. We were nervous. Will he be cute? Will we connect with him? Will we feel a bond with this baby that's just being given to us? We just didn't know how to feel. And we got to the hospital. Of course, everyone's so excited. And they bring in this baby boy. And needless to say, he was not attractive. I know that probably sounds harsh. But he had been in the oven a little too long. He was really skelly and just did not look cute at all. Of course, we put on a face and just acted really excited, and we were so thrilled, but we were struggling inside. And I'll never forget walking into Walmart, and my wife turns to me and says, Sam, I feel no connection to this baby boy. And my heart just sunk. I thought, I'm going to be a babysitter for 18 years. I tried to stay optimistic. I didn't know what to do. See, my wife had been a pediatric nurse for 5 years. I found comfort in that. But I didn't know how to help us with a connection with a little boy that you're just given. That's not even cute. Well, that night, everything changed. My wife started feeding Max and helping him and taking care of him. And in one day, we felt a connection to him. It wasn't until years later, coming back from Washington, D.C., my wife and I talking, that we realized what happened. There's a pattern here. This pattern will change your life if you'll apply it in work, in relationships, whatever it is. Here's what happened. We served him. Then we came to know him. Then a neat relationship happened where he needed us and we needed him. Everything in my life got better when Max came. Our marriage got better. Everything got better. That boy changed me. See, people will not give you their hand until they can see your heart. That's by John Maxwell. See, this pattern works if you will work it. If you will serve associates, get to know them, find out about their family, find out about their kids, find out about what they like to do, find out what they don't like to do, find out what's interesting to them, pay attention, make them feel important. Same with residents. Who are they? Find out about them, get to know them, serve them. I often love to end a meeting with an associate by saying, how can I serve you? It catches them off guard. They don't expect the director of the building to ask that question. Serve them, get to know them. The most powerful thing in this business, it's when a relationship happens where those associates feel like they need you and then you feel like you need them. Or when those residents feel like they need you and you need them. That's the importance factor. That's the formula for achieving it. You know, if I was to talk to you about what is one thing that if done better would dramatically have an impact on the culture, your business, and your relationships, what might you bring up? Well, I would bring up learning how to communicate and effectively listen. There's a CD set called Listening for Success. In there, he asked a question. If you scrambled the word listen, what two words can you spell? Well, one is silent and the other is enlist. See, good listeners are really good at being silent and learning how to enlist, be there, be present, enlist in that conversation. I find that listening is probably one of the toughest skills to develop, but is one of the most important. One of the greatest two words that I've ever heard of for solving any problems in this business or whatever it is, are these two words. Ask, listen. Ask, listen. The greatest formula for listening success is just learning how to ask and then listen. Let me tell you a story to teach something I call the understanding factor. There's a great associate that I just learned to love named Francis. One night, it was late, I was working long hours, anxious to go home and be home with my family. About 7:30 at night. I walk behind my office door, and I look down the hallway, and there's Frances sitting in a chair by her medication cart, not passing meds. If you're the director at this point, what should you do? Yeah, at least go and talk to her and find out what's happening and, hey, you need to start passing your medications. Well, I didn't. I was tired and I just ignored the situation and kept on moving. Not suggesting that's the right thing to do. I'm just letting you know that's what I did. About 15 minutes later, I walk by the same hall. Guess what I see? Frances is still sitting there. Her meds are not being passed. And now she's on her cell phone. I said, oh, this is too much. So I put together a real inspiring speech. It went something like this. Francis, 15 minutes ago, I walked by this hallway, and you were sitting on that chair, not passing meds. And now 15 minutes later, you're still sitting here, and you are on your cell phone. Well, it sounded inspiring, but right when I was about to give it, walking towards her, I asked a question. I said, Francis, how are you? And she said, oh, I hurt so bad. And I sat down next to her, and she reached down with the executive director on the floor and her in a chair. And she squeezed my hand and held it. And I said, tell me about it, Francis. And for the next 10 to 15 minutes, I said nothing about passing medications. We talked about Francis and how her knees hurt so bad and she was too young for replacements and how the medications that she needed she couldn't take because she couldn't drive or work and be on them. And how that particular day, she was really hurting. It was one of the neatest experiences I've ever had as a director. As I entered into her world for a moment and really strived to understand, by the end of that conversation, I had said nothing about medications that needed passed. I didn't feel the need to anymore. I got up and started walking away. Something interesting happened. As I started walking away, Francis said, I guess I'll start passing my medications. See, Francis didn't need someone to tell her, you need to get passing your medications. She needed someone that would simply understand. Ralph Nichols said, the most basic of all human needs is the need to be understood and to understand. That's the understanding factor. There's a great power there in building the relationship and rapport with associates. In closing, I'd like to share a story with you about my favorite horse ride. It's called Hurricane Pass. Sounds enticing, doesn't it? On this horse ride, you start on the Driggs, Idaho side, and you end up at Jenny's Lake by Jackson Hole, Wyoming. This particular time, it was a two-day ride. So we were staying overnight. Well, when you stay overnight, at least in our case, we brought a horse or two that was extra that would carry a pack saddle. And we would put those saddle packs on this horse, and he would carry a lot of that burden of our supplies. The problem is if each side of this pack isn't exactly the same weight, then you're going to be in trouble because you'll spend most of your time just adjusting the pack, hopping off your horse, adjusting the pack because it keeps falling. Well, that's what happened to us. In the first mile or so, we had gotten off that horse and adjusted that pack 4 to 6 times because it kept falling. Finally, my father-in-law picked up this big rock and he shoved it on the side that was coming up over the horse. And did you know we went the rest of that trip without having to adjust the pack once? See, this ride is beautiful. There's mountains and there's rivers and there's small streams and there's waterfalls and beautiful, clear, crisp lakes. Just a beautiful ride. There's granite boulders everywhere. It's just some of the most beautiful scenery that I've ever seen. But here's the challenge. In business, most of us won't add the rock. The things that I've covered with you on this CD today are the rock. They're the things that will teach you about leadership and what they do and how to start to create that culture that people want to work with you and embrace your ideas and what you want to accomplish in the senior living industry. They apply to all of healthcare and all of business. And yet most of us feel like we don't have time to add these things, to develop them in people and to implement them. And so we go through our business, stopping symbolically every 10 feet, every 20 feet, every couple miles, having to adjust our pack because we didn't take the time to implement the importance factor, understanding factor, and what leaders do and who they hire. And that's how most of us run our businesses to some degree or another. And I get it. I've done the same. The problem is, it doesn't have to be that way. If you'll just choose to add the rock, I know it's a burden. I understand it. Here's the problem. Whenever a business is trying to succeed, in my experience, there's always a breaking point. There's always a point where you've worked so hard, climbed so high, and you'll come to a point where it's really tough. It can be really hard. And I find if you will wait long enough and press forward long enough and break through that point, then you see great success. That's how this ride is. Two-thirds of the way up, there's a pass called Hurricane Pass. And it's really narrow switchbacks. And it can be dangerous. My father-in-law always says, never stop in the switchbacks. Can you imagine if you're in the switchbacks and that pack starts to move and fall off that horse because you chose not to add that rock? Now, I get it. A few months ago, on a particular trying day at work, trying to learn how to be a director over a 250-bed assisted living at the age of 30, realizing that I'm way over my head. I remember leaving that morning, and I don't see my kids, coming home, and they're already in bed. Plenty of problems at work. As I was driving home, wanting to quit everything that I had dreamed I could accomplish with this business, wanting to get away from the pain and the struggle and not seeing my family and everything else, with tears in my eyes, I just wanted to give up. That's the switchbacks. That's when you've got to make sure that you've added the rock in this business. Because if you'll wait long enough, we've met awesome success now. And this building has turned around in every department. And we're the highest occupancy it's ever been, with a goal to get it to 100%. And we're heading there ahead of schedule. Every department head has made the suggestion that the building is much better than it's ever been. It's not me. It's the principles of adding the rock. See, once you get through Hurricane Pass, you come up even with the most majestic scene that I've ever seen. You're even with the Grand Teton. It's beautiful. It's magnificent. It's worth the ride. It's worth paying the price to get through the switchbacks. I hope you will. I hope that you'll add the rock. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this audio. I hope it'll serve you in some way, and I hope that you will utilize it to bless the lives of residents, families, and associates.